just outside your doorway. So get outside and find it in the Maine outdoors. Fishing and hunting, winter, spring, summer, and fall. If it happens in the Maine outdoors, they talk about it all. Just tune in your radio to 103.9. Jim and Paul and Bob and Matt are your outdoors hotline. Each Sunday night at 7 on WVOM. To find out what is happening, just listen to the radio to the Maine outdoors.
Welcome to the Maine Outdoors. Here's tonight's host, V. Paul Reynolds.
And good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Maine Outdoors. I'm your host tonight, Greg Burris, sitting in for V. Paul Reynolds, coming to you live from Blueberry Broadcasting Studio 7 in Bangor, Maine. And in our control booth tonight, we have that master of the airwaves, our technical guru and good friend, Norm Plord. Good to see you, Norm.
Good to see you, Greg. How you been?
Hey, good. How about you?
Good, good. I was kind of hoping here that the snow would disappear, but looking at the forecast towards the end of the week, I don't know.
I know. I'm trying not to look that far.
It's best not to.
I just came from a place a week ago. I could have used you really to come along with me because we went to Labrador and talk about snow. There's a lot of snow up there. It seems like it's winter most months of the year.
Yeah, we go fishing in Kuparu, and that's definitely below, what's the name of the place we mentioned earlier?
Shibugamo.
Mm-hmm. And I remember the first time I went, it was like the last week of May, and a lot of the lakes we were going by were frozen.
They're still frozen.
And
yeah.
I'm going, oh my God, I hope where we're going, the lakes are open.
Yeah, usually they're telling me the lakes don't go out until, it doesn't go out up there until the middle of June.
Yeah, oh yeah. Stuff.
But we had fantastic hunting for ptarmigan and caught a lot of big fish up there.
Nice.
Just water everywhere and lots of fish, so it was fun. But the Newfies up there, they speak English, which was great, but coming through Quebec, they speak French. So I had to dust off my French, but I'm not that good. So it would have been nice to have you along to to order my meals for me. we've got a great show for you all tonight, folks. We'll be talking about sea-run brook trout, sea-run smelts, and tommy cod. What's a tommy cod, you ask? Well, we're going to tell you in just a few minutes, because our guests with us tonight are fisheries biologist Stephen Polis and Zach Scheller. They're going to be talking about their projects that they're working on down east. So pull up a chair with your favorite beverage and lend an ear. And as always, if you have a question or comment for our show or guests, please call us at 1-800-966-1039. Our program tonight is brought to you by the Northwood Sporting Journal, the best outdoor newspaper in Maine. Please check out the journal's website at www.sportingjournal.com. And it's also, our show is also brought to you by General Appliance on Center Street in Brewer. We want to remind all of our listeners that you can hear our station on 103.9 FM Bangor, 101.3 FM Augusta, 95.1 FM Rockland, or you can stream us live on the internet from anywhere in the world, or you can rewind us on our podcast at WVOMFM.com. Now, before we get to our guests, let's check in with our Outdoor Digest, see what's happening out there. Cue the music, Norm.
Hunting, fishing, loving every day. That's the prayer that a country boy prays. Thank God he made me this way. Hunting, fishing, loving every day.
Yeah, just love that intro, man. Just love it. Most of the lakes and ponds down east are ice-free after what felt like a very short winter. Most of the lakes weren't safe until around the 20th of January, and then most waters went ice-free south of Route 9 around March 10th. So it seemed like a very short winter, leaving us with just a little bit of over a month of safe ice for ice fishing. But like those hardy Mainers we are, our fishermen have been out and about trolling already on the lakes and ponds or out in their float tubes on some of the smaller ponds. Since the middle of March, people have been out there going for it, Norm.
Pull out the snowmobile suits.
Exactly right. Yeah, no, it's cold out there for sure. The trollers are catching salmon already using live smelt, and the float tubers are out there catching trout using small streamer flies like the Mickey fin.
Got to be chilly in the float tubes.
It's got to be. You know, that water temperature is around
35
to 39 degrees.
Better find your neoprene waders.
Yeah, you want your 5 mil neoprene waders out there. Not all this early open water is leading. Now, all this early open water is leading me to the same question that most anglers have been asking me and calling me and texting me about. Can we fish the open water before April 1st? The answer is that brooks, rivers, and streams are all closed until April 1st. Unless otherwise it's listed in the specifically in the law book that you can. So we have a few waters down east, that like the Orland River and the Penamaquan, that we've opened up for river fishing in the wintertime. But most all the other ones are closed. As for lakes and ponds in the southern zone, which we are in, if the water is open to ice fishing, it's open to open water fishing, unless it has a CO, which is means closed open water, listed beside the water in the law book. In the northern zone, the water is open if it's listed with an A or a B beside the water in the law book. Otherwise, the water is closed. The official statement from IFNW says that there is no need at this time to open waters early through emergency rulemaking due to rule changes that were made during the early ice out in 2016. This provided plenty of open water to fish on many of Maine's lakes, most popular lakes and ponds. Any waters that do not allow early season fishing are purposely managed that way to address resource needs. The department urges all anglers fishing in and around our cold spring waters to wear a life jacket. Good advice. In other outdoor news, the Maine Supreme Judicial Court issued a ruling regarding the Right to Food constitutional amendment and the state's ban on Sunday hunting. The complainants in the lawsuit alleged that the Sunday hunting ban violated their constitutional right to food and tried to sue the department. Maine Supreme Court ruled that the ban on Sunday hunting ban does not conflict with the right to food. Here's part of the department's statement regarding that ruling. We continue to review the court's decision and are pleased to hear that the court ruled in favor of the state and in favor of protecting Maine's fish and wildlife resources. We also don't want to forget that applications for the 2024 Moose Hunt lottery will be accepted online starting April 1st and going till May 15th. The new application period will now allow moose hunters to know how many permits are issued and in what zone. The 2024 Moose Lottery drawing will take place on Saturday, June 15th in Fort Kent. See, the public hearing on the proposed number of the 2024 moose permits and the elimination of the fourth week adaptive hunt was held this past week on March 26th. The public comment period, however, is still open. So the deadline is until April 5th. So if you still have any concerns about the numbers of permits that's being proposed or eliminating that fourth week adaptive hunt, you can still contact the department. If you have that comment on the proposals, you can contact Becky Orff at 287-5202, or you can email Becky at becky.orff@maine.gov. Now, the total numbers being proposed are the same as what was in 2023's hunt. There's 2,645 antler and 1,460 antlerless for a total of 4,105. There's also a archery proposal aligning crossbows to be considered archery equipment. So that one is also going through the process right now. That just means that any place you can basically hunt with a bow and arrow, you can hunt with a crossbow now. That's what's being proposed. So that's going on. And now I want to get to our guests. We have Stephen Polis with us, a fisheries biologist with the Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife, and Zach Scheller, a fisheries biologist with the Maine Department of Marine Resources, who are concentrating on the Bay of Fundy Aquatic Connectivity Project. So good evening, guys, and welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Why don't you give us a little bit of background about your project?
Okay, so yeah, the Bay of Fundy Aquatic Connectivity Project is a funded partnership through the Natural Resources Conservation Service, and it's a partnership between the NRCS, Maine Inland Fisheries and Wildlife, the Department of Marine Resources, and the Passamaquoddy Tribe. And the goal of this project is to restore aquatic organism passage in down east Maine coastal watersheds that flow into the Bay of Fundy.
Excellent. I'm really excited about this project, guys. Of course, it's you guys are right in my office, so I've heard a lot about this and met with you guys. You really concentrate on a lot of these coastal streams and rivers, all the way from Cutler all the way through to the St. Croix River. And it's concentrations that really have needed to happen because you're inventorying what you've got there for species, which in a lot of those coastal streams, we really haven't known. We didn't know all the brook trout populations that you guys have found, as well as tommy cod populations, viewing some of the sea runs coming in and out of there, alewives, as well as anadromous smelt, ocean-going smelt. So, and all the issues that happening in and around those coastal streams, whether it be poor bridges or culverts and road crossings for streams and stuff. So, you guys are finding out a lot. You really intensely concentrating on this area, and you'd be able to identify problems and then fix those problems and improve things down there. So it's great stuff. And we're going to get right back to you in just a minute, but I want to break for our first commercial. Go ahead, Norm.
More Maine Outdoors next.
Okay, and we're back with our guest tonight, fisheries biologist with the Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife, Steve Polis, and fisheries biologist Zach Scheller with the Maine Department of Marine Resources. Thanks for being with us, guys. And we're talking about the Bay of Fundy Connectivity Project down east. And before we get into exactly what you guys are finding down there, let's talk a little bit about the biology and the life cycle of some of these fish, like tommy cod. What's a tommy cod? Because most people, I'm pretty sure, because I get questions about this, don't know what a tommy cod is, and some people think that it's almost like it's a mummy chub or a mummy chog that they bought off the bait dealer that lives in the small estuaries and they they use them for bait up there, but it's actually not that fish. It's a cod. So talk. Either one of you talk a little bit about the biology and the life cycle of that fish.
Yeah, Atlantic tomcod are a really cool species, and Maine's fortunate to have millions of sea run fish come back to its coast every year. So we get the benefit of great inland fishing, but we also have a bunch of sea run fish that contribute to the ecosystem. And these tomcod are one of the very few that comes up in the middle of the winter, so around Christmas, and the antifreeze compounds in their blood actually keep them from freezing, and they're able to spawn and in the small little coastal streams and also some of the larger rivers and streams along the coast.
Yep. Now, when I was growing up, we called them frost fish, and I'd always get down to my grandparents, and we'd see the frost fish spears in the barn, and they would go out right around Christmas time in the small streams, because back then it was colder than it is now, so the streams were actually frozen over, so they would have to chip a hole out, and they would put a little piece of tin down on the bottom, and they would shine the light down, and they would see these tommy cod, frost fish as they called them, come over the top of the tin, and they could see them, and they would spear them, like with these frog spears. That's what I would see. And they're delicious. Where do they live most of the times of the year? Are they ocean-going fish, or are they mostly out in the small bays and out in the mouths of the estuaries?
Yeah, mostly sticking close and near shore, and then coming up just above head of tide into fresh water to lay their eggs, and eggs are there for a couple weeks, and then those juveniles make their way back out into the bays.
Mm-hmm. Do we know how plentiful these fish are, or how how many populations we have in these streams at all?
I don't think so. I think it's a big, big question mark.
Yeah, I thought so. So how big do these fish get? I mean, how big do you got? Have you guys seen them in your work?
I think the largest we've seen is 14 inches.
Okay.
But, you know, just one or two individuals amongst dozens.
Yeah.
That are generally 6 to 8 inches.
Okay. And those bigger individuals, mostly females?
Yeah, mostly. I've seen one big male.
Yeah, pretty small sample size, but yeah, that's what we've seen so far.
Okay, good deal. Now, when I've been out in the wintertime hook and lining for sea smelts, once in a while I'll get these tommy cod. I've caught them in the Narragansett. I've caught them down on the Kennebec. So they're in and around, still in that time of the year through the wintertime, still in those river systems. And you can catch them on bloodworms, you know, sandworms. They seem to come readily to those. Now, they look like, you know, a small Atlantic cod, right? I mean, that's basically what they look like. They're just a really tinier version.
Yeah, and the meat's same sort of tasty white meat. So yep. If you're hungry for a fish feed, there you go.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, excellent. So let's talk a little bit about smelts. I mean, what are the sea smelts? Where do they go? Where do they live most of the time? Are they out in the oceans? Are they mostly in the bays? Is there a lot of mixing between drainages? What do we know about them?
From what I've read, you know, they've been found in trawling samples as far as like 60 kilometers offshore.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not well researched or documented. I think there's still a lot of unknowns with that sort of thing.
Right.
But I think mostly inshore.
Right. Okay. So, you mean, sea run smelts, they're going to start running pretty soon.
Yeah, towards the end of April.
Towards the end of April. Yep.
There's been some reports of them running further south in Maine already.
Okay. All right. Yep. They sort of seem to start in southern Maine and then kind of move north. I mean, as far as the timing of their runs. Not that it's, you know, they're the same populations. They're just kind of moving up the coast, but their populations are generally in and around the small bays and the mouths of the estuaries, and they're moving in, you know, and generally starting April to spawn.
Yeah, for sure. And they're, you know, being one of the first fish to come back into the rivers and streams in the spring, they were pretty important food source for the, you know, Native Americans and then the early settlers.
Yeah, yeah.
After a long winter, it might be nice to get some fresh fish.
Absolutely, yeah. I usually, when I hear the peepers start peeping, then I start looking at the tides, and it's usually around the 20th, 21st of April. This year, do you think it's going to be a little earlier?
I guess that depends if we get some nor'easters and cold weather.
That's right, like we got supposedly coming this week, right? Yeah. Because you think it's water temperature that really triggers these fish, or is it photo period or both?
I think you hit the, you know, all those things
all those
combined,
things.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, the quite the same for a lot of other fish species or even, right. You know, deer and things like that for
sure.
Rut.
Sure. Now, those populations, you know, in the southern Maine, up even towards central Maine, are not as robust as they used to be. So their limits are lower in those parts of the state compared to down east where we still have a 2-quart limit, correct?
That is correct. And, you know, over the years, people have proven that the runs are still healthy in down east Maine to keep that. There's a lot of work, connectivity work happening up and down the coast to try to fix those culverts right on the ocean or those, if there's dams right on the ocean, getting some fish passage and all those things help build these populations back up. So
right.
With the goal that people are able to harvest more and enjoy more, not to mention, you know, the benefit to the ecosystem that all the nutrients from these fish bring.
Absolutely. Yeah. So is there a lot of mixing going on between, you know, these populations and these different river systems? I think there was some studies not too long ago that showed that there were mixing of these genetics, so from one river system to another. These populations may, you know, stick around, the local population may stick around in those local bays and off the mouths of the those brooks, rivers, and streams, but some of them stray and they'll mix with other populations.
Yeah, absolutely.
That keeps that genetic variability going.
Yeah, and in some places, I know, like the St. Lawrence River, they don't. They've identified 5 genetic distinct populations
okay.
of rainbow smelt, which would indicate that there's not a whole lot of straying going on in that system.
Interesting. Wow. Okay. Yeah. That straying that keeps that genetic variability going on, so that you have the survival of the fittest that goes on. I mean, it happens in our freshwater smelt populations, where Dave Rupp's research on Branch Lake, where he took smelts and he marked them with different colored threads from different streams, and found that on other nights they would be, he would find the different colors from the stream that he marked in a different stream the next night. So they were moving around. The studies I've read about and seen about the sea runs, they do some of this similar stuff right in the ocean.
Yeah, for sure. And that's the cool thing, that if you improve connectivity in a set of streams in one area, yep, you might have fish that are already ready to go in there and start spawning.
Good deal. Now we have a caller on the line. Caller, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
This is James Rulin calling from Naples, Maine. Hey, I know, James. This is a little off topic, but I was wondering if you knew anything about the update on whether we have to register deer online versus going into a tagging station.
Boy, I haven't heard the update on that. Have you guys heard that at all? I know it's certainly been talked about, but they, from what I know, the department hasn't made that switch yet. If you have questions about that more, you can call the wildlife biologist at any of the regional offices, or certainly the main office in Augusta, and they can tell you where they're at with that conversation.
I know you guys are hunters, and I hope they don't do away with that face-to-face thing. You know what I mean? Where you've got a young guy down there, he's got his first deer. You know, everybody's down there weighing the deer. Just that face-to-face thing is going away in a lot of things, and I hope that doesn't go away as well.
Yeah, I know absolutely what you're saying, James. I like going in and tagging my deer as well, and at the tagging station, and seeing a lot of the people there and being able to talk with them about, you know, their hunting experiences, and I totally get that. Yep.
If you guys could talk about that in the future, I'd love it.
All right.
Well, love your show.
All right. Thank you very much for calling, right, James. Appreciate it very much. Okay.
Right on.
Great. Yep.
Bye.
Take care. All right. So, good call. Excellent question. I love that. And because we're all hunters, all three of us, we love to get out there and deer hunt in the fall, and hopefully have some luck and harvest and get some great meat. But I also want to talk about sea run brook trout for a little bit. Now, there's still a lot of questions in Maine about sea run brookies, you know, where they come from, where they go, you know, how to best protect them and how to enhance their populations. Either one of you talk a little bit about sea runs and what we do know about them right now.
So Zach and I have seen, brook trout using tidal water at night when we're monitoring smelt during high tide. We're out there with a spotlight looking for smelt, and we see brook trout swimming around in the brackish water. And we've also, caught them angling in salt water. But as to what extent, what level of anadromy, I think there's still a lot of questions around that.
Right. Yeah. Now, I know one of the streams that you guys work on, or one of the rivers you work on, is the Orange River. And we know that for the most part, the brook trout have been extirpated from that system. There's a few small streams that are in the Orange that still have them. But you still see a bunch of sea run brookies coming up to the mouth of the Orange River, up to that first dam in Whiting, and feel that they don't come from the Orange River system itself, but they come from corresponding streams that are leading into Whiting Bay. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's what we seem to believe. We've caught them under that dam. Nice brook trout, and they kind of disappear once the water temperature is too warm.
Right.
So it's really happening in the spring.
Yeah.
And I doubt they're falling over the dam and ending up there. They're likely coming from another tiny stream.
Right.
Whiting Bay.
Yeah. The dynamics there, or the situations, the different situations that we can find that I think that sea run brook trout appear is, you've got, like you were saying, some of the streams that are close by, they go into the bays and they hit another freshet and they come up that freshet. and it's not their natal stream that they're coming from. So they're moving around, they're feeding, they're hitting these other streams and making forays up into those streams and feeding. And we don't know whether it's a genetic that they do that, or whether it's just circumstances where they, you know, they were young, they got sucked down in a big flow and got pushed down into the ocean and kind of got forced into a higher salinity. We just don't know all the situations of why, you know, they ended up in those estuaries or in the ocean. But they take advantage of it because there's so much more food there. It's a pretty rich environment for them to feed.
Yeah, and it's pretty cool that fish like that kind of exist, you know, on the landscape, and you're angling opportunities, but also just the fact that they're there,
right,
doing some pretty cool evolutionary things is pretty neat to know.
Yeah, for sure. Well, let's take another break for a commercial, Norm. And remember, everybody, when the other stations are rocking, we're talking about the Maine outdoors. We'll be right back after these messages.
Outdoors next.
Okay, and we're back. And want to remind all of our listeners, if you have a comment or question for our guest tonight, you can call us at 1-800-966-1039. Now, my guest tonight is Zach Scheller, he's a fisheries biologist of the Maine Department of Marine Resources, and Steve Polis, who's a fisheries biologist of the Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife. And we were talking about sea run brook trout. Their projects are concentrating on connectivity within the Bay of Fundy, which is their area extends from the Cutler all the way down through to the St. Croix there in Callis and up above towards Woodland. So I just wanted to touch a little bit more on sea run brookies. We talked about tommycod. We talked about sea run smelts. Sea run brookies, when I was a kid, I fished for them quite often. The timing of them coming in to these coastal streams, you guys find May, June? Is that when you usually see them?
Yeah, so like I stated earlier, you know, we'll see them when we're monitoring for smelt, mm-hmm. and that's in May and June.
Yep.
And, you know, papers I've read, you know, there's also some anadromy happening in the fall.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And yeah, I'd always heard that and I'd never seen that, but it makes sense that if they're going to come to spawn, you know, they're going to head to freshwater, these freshwater streams, and that you'd see them in the fall. But, I just had never seen it. Of course, not on the streams in the fall as much as I am maybe in the spring. So, when I was a kid, growing up in Northeast Harbor, we had a little brook that came into the harbor, and it was every year, like clockwork, I would come to that stream. I kept checking it, and there was no fish, and then all of a sudden they would be there, and they would be just a big, big school of them going round and round and round in this plunge pool just below the road, and they would have alewives with them too, and they would be anywhere from 8 inches up to 14 or 15 inches. It was quite a sight, and a lot of times I'd have them all to myself, so they didn't necessarily bite that well, but boy, I was persistent and I got some. In another situation, they actually came into a small pond, and we would fish for them with worms and bobbers, but we were also casting lures to them. Gold Super Duper seemed to be a really good lure for them, and they would attack it. You'd see these schools of them come in, like mackerel, you know, and attack these lures, and we'd do quite well. And sometimes they get fish up to 18 inches. So these fish get big out in those out in the ocean and out in the estuary, and then they come into fresh water, and it's something to see and certainly get on your line. So, but it was all kinds of different situations, you know, where they're in the estuary, they go out and they're in the estuaries, and then other places they come out of streams and they're directly into the ocean. I mean, it's just high salt content. There's no salt water, freshwater wedge going on there. They just come in and boom, it's high salinity. So interesting that they come into these different, you know, these different streams and different situations. So, but boy, if you found a population of them out there, they're somewhat unique and they can be big. So love them.
I think like most salmonids, there's a lot of natural variation in brook trout.
Yep. And just so people know, when we talk about osmoregulatory systems of these fish. They, like brook trout, they're, and in any of the salmonids, they're when they're in fresh water, they're trying to get as pull in as much salt as they can. But when they switch over to the ocean, this salinity is so high that they're trying to pump out salt, correct?
Yeah, that sounds right, Greg.
Yep. Okay. And hold that thought, guys. And we've got another caller. Caller, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Yeah, hi. This is Ralph from the Belgrade Lakes region.
Yeah, Ralph. What's your question or comment for us tonight?
How you doing? Well, we're on the Arnold Trail, the Benedict Arnold Trail, the lakes here. Mm-hmm. They feed into the Great Kennebec River and then down to the ocean. I was thinking sometime maybe you guys could open all the dams and we can get more trout up into these lakes in the Belgrade in the spring. Is that possible to open the dams for a while?
That's a great thought. Any you guys know anything about the Kennebec down there?
Well, it's a big river system, and there's a few very large dams on there, as well as, Maine, unfortunately, or fortunately, depends how you look at it. We have thousands of dams across the state, right? Some of those not being used for much of anything anymore, some falling apart, some quite large and generating hydropower. So, how the dams choose to operate gets under a federal regulation, and if you have a river like the Kennebec that has Atlantic salmon in it, they do have to follow certain endangered species rules and regulations. So,
right.
Like whenever, the smolts are running from the headwaters out to the ocean, sometimes dam owners will spill more water, which can help improve survival of those fish so they don't go through the turbines.
Right. Ralph, do you have specific dams that you're talking about that you know that there are fish, this fish passage in?
Yeah, I was thinking of the small ones that are actually on the lakes that keep the water high for the camps.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all this, probably 6 or 7, I would believe, that they close them and they open them depending on how high they want the water levels for the lakes. I was thinking of opening them, if you could, in the spring and just let that natural waters come up to these lakes or go out to the river, you know, back and forth at certain times, rather than keeping the dams closed and just letting a little water out once in a while. It might be drastic. I don't know. It may change the lakes completely, opening them. I'm not sure.
So hopefully, Ralph, those dams that you're talking about have fishways in them. And if that's the case, we would hope that they would be open in the spring and those fishways would be operable and those fish could just move right up through them. So if you're talking about dams that don't have fishways, they just have gates and they're going to open up those gates to, you know, let a certain flow out. A lot of times those gates, just the flow coming underneath them, they don't allow for fish to move through them. There's just too much velocity. So that's something that you gotta be aware of when you start talking about dams and allowing, you know, more flow through them to be able to attract fish, and then not only attract them but get them up over those dams. There's got to be good fishways in place.
Back in the day when Benedict Arnold canoed through here on his way to Quebec, everything was open. I mean, they used the riverways and the streams to go all over the state.
Right.
With no dams. It must have been interesting, the kind of fishing.
It must have been. Yeah. A beautiful time for sure. For sure. Well, Ralph,
thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for calling in with your question. We really appreciate it tonight.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. Yeah, no, it's an interesting, it's a good question and interesting point that he makes as far as, you know, allowing fish passage, especially in the springtime. That's when a lot of fish want to move, in the spring and in the fall. Waters are cool, especially when we talk about, salmonids or anadromous fish for sure. It's important for most all these waters to have good fish passage for the fish that we'd like to see move through them. So, yeah, and I think all of us have been working on that. And you guys have been working on that down east, and it's terrific. Tell us more about your project. I know it extends all the way over to the St. Croix, and I know that the lower dam there in St. Stephen has just been taken out, correct?
Yeah, which is fantastic. You know, a large main stem hydro dam, New Brunswick Power decided to take out. So that section of the river is now open back up, but like it hasn't been for quite a long time, hundreds of years, right?
That's right. And
the St. Croix, now there's a large push for restoration in the entire watershed.
Right.
And there's been a lot of fundraising by Maine DMR and the Nature Conservancy and the Passamaquoddy Tribe and many others to put better fish passage on Woodland Dam, but also Grand Falls, which could double the amount of river herring return to the state of Maine.
Yeah.
You know, eventually it's it really has quite high potential if we can pull it off.
But right now you've got up around 900,000, I think, alewives that are returning to the St. Croix. I think that was as of last year. And you had over hundreds, I think, of shad that are coming in. And the last, actually, the last meeting I was in, we talked about the Woodland Dam and putting in the fish lift there. We talked about possibly getting a salmon program back there again. So that's pretty exciting. With that new fish lift at Woodland, you're looking at possibly 24 to 26 million alewives going up through there, which is really exciting. Of course, we also got to put in a new fish passage up to Woodland, and that would be not a fish lift, but a natural run around up through to the man-made canal there that feeds the penstocks. So a lot of exciting things happening over there on the St. Croix. See, now I want to just break into a live commercial, guys, and we'll get right back to what we were talking about. Norm, of course, one of our big sponsors for a long time has been General Appliance and Brewer. And that's with the new owner, Gary Coleman, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. And General Appliance has been the place, their go-to place for camp appliance needs, whether it's gas lights, gas ranges, gas refrigerators, gas freezers, or the top-of-the-line compost toilets.
And ride the wave, baby.
Ride the wave, baby, as our friend Jim Layton would say and coined the term, ride the wave. Yeah, and General Appliance at 91, it's not 91 Center Street anymore, but it's right there close by 91.
I think it's either 103 or 105.
Okay.
If I remember correctly, last time I looked.
So it's your non-electric connection, a family-owned business since the 1920s. This business has found their niche. In the changing energy times, General Appliance is there to serve camp owners with non-electric appliance needs. General Appliance services used propane appliances and sells parts for all makes and models. Models including the well-known Serval gas fridge. As for the compost toilets, they are the wave of the future in a conservation-minded world. Totally reliable and odor-free, they have to be seen to be believed. If you have a troubleshooting question related to propane appliances, give Gary Coleman a call at 989-3714, right? And stop in for a visit. General Appliance and Brewer, the non-electric solution for camp owners throughout Maine. That's General Appliance at Center Street in Brewer. Compost toilets, no running water, no plumbing issues, no septic to be pumped, no leach field problems, no environmental issues. General Appliance. What can we say? I mean, Sue and I went and got our stuff there for our camp, and we've loved it. They've been terrific.
It's been a great resource for years.
It really has. So go to see Gary Coleman at General Appliance at 989-3714, and that's on Center Street in Brewer. Okay, guys. So we're talking about the St. Croix. We're talking about the exciting things happening there with new fish passage. The fish passages there at Grand Falls and at Woodland, those are antiquated Deniel fishways that have been there since the 60s, and they're in the process of basically falling apart. And if you didn't do something soon to improve them, the runs just weren't going to be able to get up over those dams. So there's been a lot of hard work from a lot of people, and it's really exciting to see. So, but talk about some of the other projects that you guys have got going down there in your section.
Yeah, so, our project area is quite large, and, there's over 400 public culverts and 17 dams on the landscape that, Zach and I have put eyes on, multiple times. by now. And, you know, ideally we'd like to fix all of them for fish passage. However, we do have a limited budget we're working with. And so we've had to prioritize, you know, where to spend our dollars based on fisheries gains. So we spent a lot of time, you know, monitoring for things like sea run smelt and tom cod and brook trout and American eels.
Yeah, you know, having a bad culvert in a stream or a river or a dam that isn't functioning properly, it's not just about fisheries gains. It's also, you know, streams and rivers are living things that move and ebb and flow and carry sediment and, you know, other organisms and bugs and fish and all sorts of things, like a conveyor belt down to the ocean. And so whenever you have something in that that constricts it or makes it not be able to function that way, you can raise like flood risk and things like that. We've seen quite a bit of flooding across Maine here over the past number of months, which is unfortunate. By looking at how we design some of our infrastructure around our waterways, we could potentially reduce some of that.
For sure. So talk to me about some of the problematic, you know, road crossings that you guys have come across, you know, where you, bad culverts, you know, too small of bridges, you know, narrow bridges that, you know, just create gauntlets and whatnot and pinch points that, you know, inhibit, you know, fish movement.
Right. So if you have a stream that's 15 feet wide above a culvert and you try to funnel all that through a 3-foot wide pipe, you make a fire hose at high flows.
Right.
And that fire hose digs out big scour pools below and on the banks below. And it also undermines the road and it can make the whole thing wash out.
Absolutely. Now hold that thought. We've got a caller. Caller, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
David from Old Town.
Okay, David, what's your question and comment for our show tonight?
Well, I heard you say earlier that you do a lot of fishing up around Chibigamau.
Well, I just went there once this winter.
Oh, you went this winter?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Have you been up that area?
I started in 81 making trips up to Mistassini, Lake Mistassini up there.
Okay.
And I did 14 trips. I did a lot of guided trips up
there. Oh, wow.
It's been years since I've been up. It's been maybe a dozen years or more, and I didn't know how much everything's changed, and I've been thinking about going back, so I didn't know if anybody had been up that way.
Well, I was impressed with just a little time that I spent up there this winter. Norm's been shaking his head when you're talking about Chibigamau and Mistassini, because he knows that area some up there, and he's fished up there and seen the resources. It's amazing, David. It reminds me of the old Maine that we used to experience a long, long time ago, or what I'd heard about anyway. Just, you know, tremendous resources up there. So I hope you do get to go back. I'm hoping to go back. You know, the pictures that the guys were showing me and the places that they just run across and catch these big brook trout up there, it's just mind-blowing.
Yes, it is. Now, does Norm have a number I could get a hold of if he's still going up? I'd just like to...
I haven't been up in a long time.
One time.
I now go to Kuparu, which is further south. It's probably a couple hours outside of Chicoutimi.
Okay.
But no, I haven't been up to Chibigamau and Mistassini in quite some time.
Are you looking for a guide, David? Is that what you're...
No, I used to do guiding up there myself.
Okay.
You know, people right here from Maine, we'd drive into there and put our boats in and go 60 miles up the lake to 10 out for the week.
Oh, yeah, it's huge. Okay. Mistassini's amazing.
Down in Mistassini,
Mistassini's amazing.
I just didn't know, you know, if anybody was still doing that kind of stuff or what has changed up there and since then. You know, it's been like a dozen years since my last trip, probably.
Yeah. I was like a kid in a candy store when I went up there, you know, just hearing about all the resources and experiencing a little bit firsthand and thinking about the dynamics between all the fish species up there, especially, you know, we talk about muskie and pike down here being invasives. Well, you know, pike up there are native, and you think, well, they're going to eat everything. Well, that's not not the case. There's so much cold water up there, it really benefits a lot of those cold water species. And so there's not the spawning habitat or the rearing habitat for pike as much. And those cold water fish are eating pike too. So fish eat fish. And so it was just an interesting place to see and learn about up there when I was there, and in comparison to what we have going on down here. So hope to get back.
Well, me too. I'm getting up there now in years, and I got guys that I used to go with that want me to take them back again sometimes. Or, you know, like I said, I've kind of tried to check on some of the laws and things, and I don't even know if our camp sites we used to stay at were even open anymore.
Yeah.
So, but.
Yep. I
well,
wish
thank
I could.
You anyway.
Yeah, no,
it was a great fishery. It's a great place to go.
Yeah, no,
have
thanks for your call.
To do it.
Appreciate that. All right. Have a good night.
Right.
Thank you, David.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, so those plunge pools that people see, guys, at you know, the undersides of the roads there, they're great places to fish, but they are scour holes. They're a result of too small a culvert, perch culverts with a lot of velocity coming through there. Like you said, Zach, it's like a fire hose just blasting out the stream bottom. And things. So a lot of anglers don't think of it in those terms. They think, it's just a great pool to fish in. But it's really a check that it's inhibiting fish basically moving through those areas many times, and it's causing problems. So we've all talked about this, and I was fascinated by, of course, we've got climate change going on, and we've got higher waters, sea level rising, and that's changing things a little bit more. Can you talk about that and what problems that fish have to reach where they need to spawn, these anadromous fish, whether it be tommy cod or smelt, to places where they need to find the specific place to spawn?
Yeah, so in some places, you know, they just spawn just above head of tide.
Yep.
And they don't really need much of the stream to come in and reproduce and do their thing. And, you know, in some places where they spawn below culverts, you know, they're fine right now. But as sea levels rise and with these big flood tides and rain on snow events, you know, they may be forced to use those culverts and spawn up above those stream road crossings.
Right.
So having properly sized crossings so they can access that spawning habitat is crucial.
And that's where you guys come in, where you identify these places where it's problematic for these fish to be able to move through, be able to prioritize those sites, and then direct the money towards those projects.
So, that's a goal.
Yeah, good. Well, I think you'll get there. I think you have a lot of people that, of course, show me the money, but you guys will be able to do that, prioritize those places and get it done and improve things. So we really appreciate you guys coming on the show tonight. We could talk about this for all day long, you know, but we only got just a short period of time. There's lots going on out there in the landscape. You guys are just a real important part of that. And again, I'm so impressed with what you're doing down there, and you're right on top of things. And I'm hopeful for the future that there's going to be more young biologists like you guys coming along and improving the fish habitat out there. So, and improving the fish population. So thank you very much, Zach and Stephen, and appreciate it. So, and all of you listeners out there, we really appreciate you listening tonight to the Maine Outdoors.
And we still have a few seconds.
We have a few seconds? Okay. Trying to get my timing down for that, right? Well, thanks, everybody, for listening to our show tonight. I thought it was a good one. We got a lot of information out there to you folks. And appreciate all the call-ins, too.
There we go.
Okay. Have a good night, everybody.